This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Busted. The feds finally indict a Myrtle Beach pastor, preacher John Paul Miller, after the swamp death shooting of his wife, Micah Miller. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
I just want my family to know where to find me.
Micah, now dead, by gunshot wound, her body found submerged in a body of water.
I even tried to raise her from the dead one time.
Did he just say he tried to raise her from the dead and he laid by her body four times?
Was she convinced by someone to kill herself? A possibility.
In the last hours, the feds do what state authorities would not do. They bring down the hammer on the so-called pastor, John Paul Miller, after the shocking death of his young wife, who he allegedly harassed straight into a gun shop. But first, before I get into those charges, thank you, feds, let's take a listen to the now federal defendant, John Paul Miller, at his finest.
I got this lay next to her body and spent time with her body about four times this week, and each time it still didn't hit me. I thought she was going to wake up, you know. I even tried to raise her from the dead one time this week, and she was so creative. Everything she did was so creative. What's the next picture? You know, I've been speaking for many years, and for the first time, I don't really know exactly, you know, how to open or how to close or any of that.
I'm going to have to play that again. That is from Solid Rock Ministries. Does he actually think I'm buying this? There were no tears and definitely no snot. I need to see that one more time.
I can't wait to see her again one day. I'm good. And that's nothing. She was so creative. It was just always coming out of her.
So many things just jump out at me. Again, that is from Solid Rock Ministries. For those of you just joining us, the pastor, John Paul Miller, finally facing federal charges in connection to his wife, Micah Miller. First of all, he says, after all these years, you know, speaking, he suggests that he is short of words. He doesn't know what to say, but yet he keeps talking. He says he doesn't like pain. Well, get ready for a boatload of it, John Paul Miller. Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we are learning, straight out to Alexis Terezchuk, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Alexis, the feds finally bring down the hammer. This after hundreds and hundreds of online protests appealing to LA law enforcement to bring charges. What are the charges, Alexis Terezchuk?
He has been charged with cyber stalking, and I'm going to read exactly the indictment that he, John Paul Miller, sent or caused to be sent unwanted and harassing electronic communications to her, used or threatened to use nude videos and photographs of her, posted a nude photo of her online without her consent, placed or caused to be placed a tracking device on her vehicle with the intent to harass and surveil her. And he interfered with her finances, banking, and interfered with her daily activities. He also made a false statement to law enforcement. They said he did knowingly and willfully make a material of false, fictitious, and fraudulent statement in representation in this case. He said that they had been calling each other back and forth. The Fed said, nope, you called her more than 50 times in one day, harassing her. He said, I never damaged her car tires. They said, you actually bought a tool to deflate car tires. And this, in fact, you caused these tires on her car to be deflated.
That's a lot from the feds. Guys, finally, what many people, what many justice champions have longed for since Micah's body was found at the Lumber River State Park. The feds bring down the hammer and do what state authorities refused to do. Listen.
Law enforcement is notified by 911 dispatch that Micah Miller is in Lumber River State Park, and they begin searching. Micah Miller's phone is pinged at 3:20 p.m., and law enforcement has a drone dispatched to the area to help search. At 3:42, Micah's car is located in the parking lot of the Lumber River State Park. Inside the car, investigators find a 9mm Sig Sauer hard gun case and receipt showing the location of where the weapon was purchased.
Many devotees still insist Micah Miller was murdered, but here is hard evidence.
Investigators at Lumber River State Park are notified by a kayaker at 4:23 p.m. that a body is in the river and a black bag with ID and money found on the bank of the river is turned over to law enforcement as well. Officers recover two spent casings and one live round on the bank of the river, and there's no sign of a physical struggle. A regional pathologist is called to the scene for assistance. Micah Miller is found submerged in the river beside tree limbs, about 100 feet from the casings.
There is a concerning aspect to the discovery of a 9mm Sig Sauer. Dr. Kendall Crowns is joining us. He is a renowned chief medical examiner out of Tarrant County. That's Fort Worth. Never a lack of business in the morgue there. He is the esteemed lecturer at Burnett School of Medicine at TCU. And he is a star of a hit new podcast, Mayhem in the Morgue. Dr. Kendall Crowns, thank you for being with us. The 9mm is removed from the river using a magnet. The serial number on the gun matches the number on the gun case in Micah's car. Is that feasible, that she committed suicide and the SIG is abandoned in the river?
Yes, it is. I mean, her body is found in the river as well. So the potential is she places the gun to the right side of her head, pulls the trigger, and then instantly her body goes limp. She falls into the river while still kind of clutching the gun or holding the gun, or the gun itself just falls into the river and slides down in the mud. Her body falls in, floats away, gun goes into the river as well. It is consistent with someone shooting themselves in the head and then losing body function, dropping the gun and falling into the waterway.
There's also the issue, and let me go to Regina Ward. She is the attorney for Micah Miller's sister. She is with her law firm that she founded, the Regina Ward Law Firm, and she has been staunchly supporting Micah's family since before Micah was killed. Regina Ward, thank you for being with us. Is it true the Sig Sauer was found about 5 feet underwater, submerged from Micah's body?
Well, I can't say for myself if it was true or not, but that's what was reported. Obviously, I wasn't there for that, but I've had several questions about that entire investigation. It was just approached in the wrong manner, in my opinion. So as far as whether it was or not, that's what the report says.
Curious that you would say that. Dr. Kendall Crowns, if the SIG was found, say, 20 or 30 feet away from the body, would you still think it was suicide?
So there's a potential when you shoot yourself in the head for there to be actual movement after the wound occurs. It really depends on what is involved in the brain. There's an area of the brain called the motor strip that kind of sits on the side of your head that controls your function of your arms, your limbs, etc. If that isn't hit, if you go a little more forward, you hit the frontal lobes of your brain, which is more memory, feelings, emotions, things of that nature. You are able to still walk after a gunshot wound to the head, albeit not super far, but you can do that.
Lord in heaven. Do you hear yourself? That after she shoots herself in the head, she can still walk.
Obviously right. It is potential, yes.
Okay. You know, when a witness says something crazy on the stand, I have to declare them a hostile witness, and I have to cross-examine them. And that's what I've got to do now. Dr. Kendall Crowns, of course, you are the medical doctor. I'm just a JD. You're the MD. But let me go out on a limb here. How many times have you seen a victim shoot themselves in the head and their body is still where the gunshot occurred, and they continue to walk? How many cases have you personally dealt with like that?
I wouldn't be able to give you an exact percentage. It's a small percentage of cases, but I have seen it.
I didn't ask for a percentage. I asked you how many. I bet you can count them on one finger.
No, I can count it on probably more than 10 fingers. In over 25 years of doing autopsies, I have seen multiple cases of individuals still able to function after shooting themselves in the head. I can't tell you exact numbers while we're sitting.
You said walk. I don't mean function. You said walk. Take steps after they shoot themselves in the head.
Okay, well, I'll rephrase function to walk, but I have seen
multiple individuals. Yeah, so you go ahead and rephrase it, Crowns.
Walk after shooting themselves in the head, including with shotguns. It is all placement on where you hit yourself in your brain and how much you'll be able to do afterwards. And it depends on where she's shot in her brain, how much movement she can have. But placement of gun, if you're going to do theoretical, yes, someone could shoot themselves in the head and then walk several feet, maybe even 10 yards away from the gun before they collapse or fall into a river and float away.
Dr. Kendall Crowns, just so you know, you're losing a lot of credibility right now, but I guess you're sticking up from one of your medical examiner friends that performed this autopsy. Dr. Kendall Crowns, there's a fly in the
ointment. I'm not sticking up for anybody. I'm just sticking up for science.
Do I have to cut your mic?
Feel free.
There's a fly in the ointment. And that fly in the ointment of your scenario is... she would have had to walk through water after she shoots herself in the head. How many cases have you seen like that? Where after the person shoots themselves in the head, they walk out in the water.
So I'm not sure how she's walking in the water. How is she not shooting herself on the riverbank and then falling forward into the water, floating away while the gun floats down underneath her? That part I don't understand.
You know, Dr. Kendall Crowns, you have a second career in writing fiction. In the meantime, while I let Dr. Kendall Crowns think about what he just said, Regina Ward, the significance of this line of questioning is, if the investigation had shown that the weapon, the Sig 9, was substantially far away from her, as if it had been thrown in the river to discard of it after the shooting, that would open up a whole nother investigation, wouldn't it, Regina Ward?
Absolutely it would. And let me tell you something else that would have opened up a better investigation, in my opinion, is that had the Robeson County authorities who were doing the investigation, had they known about the history of this case, and the sheer terror that Mr. Miller put her through and the harassment and so forth, had they known about that history prior to their investigation into her death, they may have approached it a little differently. I feel like that they approached it with the mindset, oh, it's a self-taking of a life. Therefore, let's go find the proof to prove that's what happened, as opposed to walking into it, saying to themselves, this may not be what it appears. So let's look closer for evidence that may prove that it was not a self-taking of the life.
We do, however, and let's see it, control room. We do have her supporting Dr. Kendall Crown's assertion in a gun store shortly before purchasing the Sig Sauer. That is significant because it can be matched up by serial number. The gun store keeps a log of serial numbers on guns sold. She did buy the weapon. You know, Alexis Terezchuk, joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter, was outlining the charges in the new federal indictment. For those of you just joining us, the feds bring down the hammer on Pastor John Paul Miller in connection with his wife, Micah Miller, found dead in a public forest. Listen to this.
Just weeks before her death, Micah Miller calls police for help when she finds a tire on her car's flat. Police discover a tire deflator is used on the tire. Micah goes to East Coast Honda in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to get a new tire, where John Paul Miller shows up. The two get into an argument. Video shows John Paul Miller aggressively walking around Micah, threatening to post a picture online, while Micah says, "Walk away." A mechanic later shows Micah a GPS tracking device had been placed on her car.
A geo-tracking device placed on her car. Video has actually caught John Paul Miller aggressively walking around Micah, threatening to post a picture online. Alexis Trezchuk joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. What picture would that have been, the one he threatened to post?
A topless photo of her. So a topless where she doesn't have anything on and exposing her breasts.
Joining me now, Chris Melcher. He's a veteran trial lawyer, celebrity lawyer, partner at Walser, Melcher, and Yoda. He has deep experience in complex family law litigation at WalserMelcher.com. Chris Melcher, this isn't helping anything. That is encompassed in this new federal indictment against John Paul Miller. Even if you're married to someone, you can't just post nudie shots of them without their consent.
What's going to be difficult is that the victim of these alleged offenses, Micah, can't speak for herself. And that creates a difficulty for the prosecution and an opportunity for the defense to try to explain these things, because couples do, get into arguments. They'll do things for whatever reasons. And this kind of gives John Paul Miller potentially a free hand in his defense to try and explain away what looks like some very awful facts.
Such as posting nudie shots of Micah that he took in private, posting them online. Let's just follow your argument through, Chris Melcher, to its logical conclusion. I think what you're saying in regular people talk, not lawyerese, is that Miller could now argue his wife Micah was fine with the nudie shot being posted on social. That was okay that she was into that?
This is kind of the problem is that he can start making up or manufacturing defenses like that this was consented to, this was part of their relationship, she was okay with it, it was a joke, whatever he's going to say. Now, maybe these things don't make sense or they're not credible, but Micah's not there to defend herself. They're not there to say, no, I wouldn't have done that. Now, sometimes the circumstances show that no reasonable person would consent to something like that, and it's just a ridiculous defense. But my sense is there's going to be a lot of communications between these parties, and he may be able to establish something here, like with example for the tracking device. He's had some explanation why he might wanted to track her, why he wanted to control her movements, why he wanted to control her spending. He has had some explanations around that.
Okay, well, you know what you are reminding me of, Chris Melcher, in my days as a felony prosecutor, when a defendant would say, "Miss Grace, I want to plead guilty with an explanation." I don't care what his explanation is. Guilty. If he put a tracking device on her car and she did not consent to it, I don't care why he thought he needed to do it. Doesn't matter. State doesn't have to prove motive, does it, Chris Melcher?
Well, so there's a difference between being a crime and being an act of domestic violence, which is a civil matter. So under South Carolina law and other states...
Domestic violence is not a crime in your world.
No, it can be both. It can be an act of abuse that justifies a restraining order. It also can form a crime. But with a tracking device, the owner of a vehicle, whether it's jointly owned or solely owned, I don't know how this was titled, has the right to place a tracking device on it. So it's not a crime to do so, but placing a tracking device on her vehicle, even if legal under South Carolina law, without her consent and done for the purpose of tracking her movements for purposes of harassment, would be an act of domestic violence. But what I understand his statements to be is that he was concerned about her conduct and safety, and that he wanted to protect her. And just like a parent might, put a tracking device on a child or any loved one who maybe has issues, that is a protective measure. So this is what I'm saying he may very well claim.
Okay, Chris Melcher, now I know why you win so many cases. You're like a snake charmer. You go that way and that way with your crazy legal defense, and some people are actually going right along with you. Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Dr. Bethany Marshall, I need a shrink, and I need it quickly. Dr. Bethany Marshall, renowned psychoanalyst, joining us out of L.A. You can see her now on Peacock. Author of Deal Breaker, and find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Did you hear what he just said? Chris Melcher stated that maybe John Paul Miller placed a tracking device on his wife's vehicle out of concern for her safety. I guess it's just another hysterical woman.
So did he also slash her tires out of concern for her safety so she couldn't get away? He was afraid she couldn't drive. You know, a better way to protect his wife would have been to cherish her, be faithful to her, say nice things to her about herself, not humiliate her by putting a naked photo out online. Nancy, did you hear when he was announcing to the congregation that he had visited the quote-unquote body several times the week before? The body, he called his wife a body. It's like she wasn't even a person to him. She was just an object to control. And what I'm going to guess is that there was a lot of control in that marriage, that he dominated her. And as she became increasingly independent, which domestic violence victims, sometimes they do get their safety, that he was escalating, and it just got worse and worse. If he was afraid for her safety, take her to a doctor's visit and get her evaluated. Don't slash her tires.
And even an earthly spouse, who's a good spouse, when they know that their bride is being hurt, just imagine what an earthly spouse does. What do you think your heavenly spouse does when you're the bride of Christ and he sees his bride going through abuse and hurt? What do you think he thinks about that?
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, are you able to trace the location of my phone?
You don't know where you're at?
A national park.
Where's the park located at?
In Bear Bluff. I have my location on, I think, on my phone. Find my phone is on. I just did my share my location.
Tell me what's happened.
I'm about to kill myself, and I just want my family to know where to find me.
Okay, ma'am. Just listen to what I'm saying, okay? Let me make sure I got the exact location where you're at, okay? Just 1 minute.
You are hearing the 911 call that Micah Miller ostensibly made just before she was killed. When a medical examiner makes a ruling of suicide, homicide, accident, natural causes, they look not just at the body, but they also look at extrinsic circumstances, as Dr. Kendall Crowns has done many, many times. Would that 911 call be one of the extrinsic circumstances that you look at to determine COD, cause of death? I mean, she's on 911 claiming, I'm about to kill myself.
Yes, I mean, that would play into the determination of manner of death, as well as purchasing the gun that day, having the receipt at the scene, as well as the autopsy findings of a contact range gunshot wound to the head with a muzzle impression, which shows that the gun is held tightly against the head. All those together really point towards suicide.
I want to go to a special guest joining us, Christiana. She has detailed for us that the pastor, John Paul Miller, begged her for nude shots. I mean, Christiana, thank you for being with us. Are you surprised that the feds have finally brought down the hammer on John Paul Miller? He is charged with multiple crimes.
I'm not surprised at all. I'm glad to see them finally sticking him with something.
Christiana, detail for us your experience with John Paul Miller.
He came into a restaurant where I was working, and he tried to hit on me, and he asked me for nudes, and he was very persistent and very inappropriate.
When was this, Christiana?
This was in February of last year, before what happened to Micah in May.
Okay, hold on. Let me understand this. Guys, joining me is Christiana, and this is not revisionist history as far as I can tell. Christiana described this incident for us at the time, contemporaneously, around the time that it happened. She's not coming out of the woodwork now that these federal charges have come down. This is a story that she has told, her story, from the beginning, and it has not changed, which is something you look at when you determine truthfulness or veracity of a witness. Has their story changed? Did they wait a long period of time to come out with their story? Do they have an ulterior motive? Are they making money off of it? Are they benefiting somehow by telling this story? This woman won't even give her last name publicly because she doesn't want the backlash from John Paul Miller supporters. You stated that you were working at a restaurant and he came up to you and started flirting with you. What did he say? And reminder, everyone, this is Feb 2024. He's married to Micah Miller at this time. The date of her death is April 27, the end of April 2024. February, March, April. 3 months before she's found dead, he's hitting on Christiana in open. At a restaurant. Exactly what happened, Christiana?
I was working at the restaurant and he was at one of my tables. He left his phone number on his receipt and he didn't say anything initially. He just left his number. But once I was in contact with him, he started right off the bat talking about how he was going through a divorce, accusing his ex-wife of being crazy and bipolar, and said she'd been in and out of the mental institution. And he pretty almost instantly started asking me for nudes.
Let's see those texts again, please. There is a smiley face and phone number. I need a bikini pic of you. LOL. I don't know if I really have any. I think most of the time when I'm in a swimsuit, I'm also in a mermaid tail. Then he says, okay, no bikini. Do you have one with just the mermaid tail? In other words, nude? She says, no, I don't think so, actually. Give me something. I'm still trying to send you pics like you wanted a genital picture from him. Hey, what are you doing? I'm working. Hint, hint, go away. Send me a pic. Send me a pic. Okay, you know, to Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, could you explain the phenomena of guys who they get sexual pleasure out of just obtaining nude photos from women they don't really even know? They're after everybody they meet to get nudes? What is that?
Okay, what I'm hearing in this story is that the minute he met her, she was working at the restaurant, he started to dominate her, asking for photos, giving his number, saying he wants to send pictures. He's not just going to use those pictures for sexual gratification, Nancy. Once he has those photos, he has ultimate power over her. Remember what he did to Micah. He released her photo online. So this is a guy who comes out of the gate looking like he wants sex, but he really wants power, and he's exploiting the woman's sexuality in order to get it.
Christiana, did you ever send a nude photo?
I did not.
But yet, he was not dissuaded, correct?
Correct. He was very persistent, and I tried to play it off as, oh, I don't have any pictures, but I was trying to dodge it, and I got the screenshots of him behaving that way, but I wasn't going to send him anything like that, and I guess I got the screenshots that I needed to show how he was behaving, and I guess he lost interest because he wasn't getting the photos that he wanted.
Doesn't seem like he lost interest very quickly. Okay, no bikini, in other words, nude. Dr. Bethany Marshall, there's another aspect to this. Okay, there's the whole voyeurism thing, which you need to explain. You're the psychoanalyst. But also, Dr. Bethany, the constant badgering. That's something different. It's not just John Paul Miller sitting all alone in the bathroom, and I won't expound on that, looking at her nude photos. But there's the badgering aspect. She said no. She's not sending them. She's LOL, go away. But he doesn't get it. He keeps badgering her. He won't quit.
Nancy, he's trying to break her down. He lost interest because he couldn't have power over her. That's what happened. When she set her boundaries, he eventually slunk away. The reason he wanted those photos, not only to degrade, humiliate, expose her, have power over her, but if you're masturbating to a photo, which is likely what he wanted those photos for, you are having a sexual experience with a piece of paper.
Okay, wait. I'm not following your train of thought. You've got Micah Miller in the next room, in the bedroom, but you're saying if the hypothetical man is masturbating to a photo he's just gotten off of a waitress at a restaurant that he's just met, why would he want that instead of going to be with his wife?
Because when you relate to your wife, you have to acknowledge that she's a full person with feelings, with thoughts, emotions, maybe a person who might say no sometimes, maybe a person who wants to spend her own money, maybe a person who has friends, wants to take a trip. Somebody like this pastor can only relate to others on the basis of power and control. He does not relate to people for who they are as though they're own individuals. And that's how we get perversions, Nancy, like voyeurism, is that the person can only get that sexual arousal by a picture of a person or an idea of a person, but they can't sit down at dinner with that person and have a full conversation with them. They can't have a sexual interaction and maybe say want to give the other person an orgasm or want to please them or relate to them as their own person. So that's why he's procuring pictures. And I think that's why Micah, God rest her soul, probably eventually took her life, because she was not a person to him anymore. She was just an object. Like, he was trying to turn the waitress into an object, and he broke her down until eventually she imagined she had no life and no future. And Nancy, that's where he was going with this waitress. If she had said yes, what could have happened to her? He could have stalked her too. He could have broken her down. He could have alienated her from other people, all the signs of abuse that we know about. But thank God she had the preservation of mind to say no, and she stuck to it.
Now, everyone, John Paul Miller insists he's innocent and has nothing to do with what happened to his wife. In fact, he is remarried. He is innocent until proven guilty. He got another woman to marry him. Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter, along with Alexis Tereshchuk joining us out of L.A. tonight. Didn't John Paul Miller apologize for sending these? I mean, if he's apologizing, doesn't that mean, if he's apologizing for doing it, doesn't that mean he did it?
He apologized to Micah for posting photos of her on that Facebook page.
Dave Mack, that is new information. It's critical for Chris Melcher's theory. Are you telling me that John Paul Miller, the pastor, apologizes to Micah? Do we have proof he apologizes for posting the nude photos?
Yeah, they actually uncovered the text message he sent to her where he said that he was evil for doing it.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Okay, Chris Melcher, bye-bye to one of your defenses. It's not going to happen, Chris Melcher, because one of your defenses, and I'm sure you're going to pull another one out of your hat like a rabbit, one of your defenses was, hey, maybe this was consensual. We don't know that. And she's dead, and she can't deny it.
That's right, Nancy. If that text message is introduced into evidence before a jury, that would establish that he sent the message. So there would be no question. If he apologized for sending it, that means he sent it. So they get that element of it. And then secondly, that he's acknowledging that it's wrong. He says it was evil. So it would be basically game over on that one element. But I still do see some potential defenses on the other things that he's accused of.
I pray that a breakthrough would happen today. I pray miracles over your life. In Jesus' name, in Jesus' name. I pray for your healing. The circumstances would change. I pray that the fear inside would flee. In Jesus' name. I pray that a breakthrough would happen today. I pray miracles over your life. In Jesus' name, in Jesus' name.
Imagine being married to that. It was like that in our house all the time.
And that hysterical laughing, it's almost maniacal. In the last hours, we are bringing you the indictment of John Paul Miller, the pastor out of South Carolina. The grand jury has met and have charged him with multiple counts. In a nutshell, Alexis Tereshchuk, what are the charges?
There's a false statement which he made when he was lying to the police officers about whether or not he had contacted her over 50 times in one day, multiple times, and then cyber stalking, where they said that he was intentionally tracking her, that he put a GPS tracker on her, and that he was using the computer and other ways to follow her, and that he said that he did not deflate her tires, but they found that a deflation device was used by him or someone that knows him to deflate her tires. And he is facing quite a few years in prison for this. The federal charges, if he is found guilty for cyber stalking, could be 5 years. It could be between 9 and 10 years, depending on the charges that the jury decides that he's guilty of. And then with the lying to the police, that's also another 5 years, possibly even 8 years that he could receive behind bars. So he could get almost 20 years behind bars. He could get a huge fine, and he could have to be on probation for many years.
So we've got count one, which is cyber stalking, and you're telling me he could be sentenced to up to 10 years on that. Is that correct?
Yes, it is absolutely correct.
And in count two, we've got false statements, and that could result in 5 years behind bars.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
So we're looking at a potential of 15 years if the charges are run consecutively. Back to Christiana joining us, who says she was approached by John Paul Miller, who begged for nudes relentlessly. Christiana, when you heard the actual charges against John Paul Miller, who remains innocent tonight as we go to air, he is presumed innocent under the law. He says he's innocent, and he will be innocent until he is proven guilty in a court of law. Christiana, when you heard the actual charges of cyber stalking and lying, did that surprise you?
I think a lot of us would like to hear a bit more than that. But in South Carolina, the precedent for domestic violence, in my own experience, I was told by a solicitor that you have to be essentially beaten to a bloody pulp to get a domestic violence conviction. So it's not surprising to me that they don't always put the highest charges on these people. And I can imagine the hopelessness that Micah would have felt, especially with her abuser being in a position of authority.
Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. What was the reaction from his flock at his church after Micah was found dead?
Nancy, it was a divided flock, okay? When his wife is found dead, half of the church immediately thought something was seriously wrong with this, and they demanded justice. As a matter of fact, there were two separate funerals or celebration of life service, whatever you want to call it. One group did it where he was not invited, and then John Paul did it one in his own, you know, at Solid Rock. So, yeah, it divided the church immediately.
Well, there were many, many protests against John Paul Miller at the time. Listen.
You're
That from the Robbie Harvey on X and Melissa Pfeiffer. Another question, Dave Mack and Alexis Tereshchuk, first to you, Alexis, is it true another woman has actually married him? Is this his third wife?
Yes, it is true. They got married. And in fact, she had a husband who died tragically in 2021. He was a quadriplegic and he drowned. So terrible tragedy. And then when she became known publicly that she was with him, with John Paul Miller, people started questioning this man's death and investigating, saying maybe there was something going on that this was, but they did rule out that any foul play happened, that he did just tragically drown. So neither one of them has a spouse anymore, and they got married.
Okay, wait a minute. So he, John Paul Miller, marries the woman. Was she a member of his church?
Yes, she and her husband were.
And the husband is a quadriplegic, and he somehow ends up in a pool?
Mm-hmm, and drowns.
Dave Mack, were there claims that these two were having an affair before her husband's death?
Absolutely. The actual accusation came from J.P. Miller's first wife, Allison Williams. She claims that Susie Skinner was involved romantically with J.P. And by the way, the day that Chris Skinner's wheelchair, you know, if you actually see the video, Nancy, his wheelchair just guns it right towards the pool. This is a pool that he fought over the homeowners association putting in a wheelchair lift so he could actually utilize the pool. And that's the pool he drowns in. And it's really weird how that happened. But when they find his body in the pool, Susie Skinner goes over and tells fire guys, hey, man, he has a do not resuscitate order. Because they pulled him out. He was not dead in the pool. They pulled him out of the water. And the paramedics are like, well, you got to show us the paperwork. And she leaves and doesn't come back in time. And, of course, they had taken him to the hospital by then. But then she doesn't go to the hospital right away. She actually hangs out and waits for John Paul Miller and his wife, Micah, and stays with them for a few hours before finally going to the hospital hours later, where she goes and visits her now dead husband at the hospital. So there's a whole lot more to this story than meets the eye, which is why after Micah Miller's death, they did bring this back out and started investigating the death of Chris Skinner.
Let's be clear about this, Dave Mack. John Paul Miller is not accused or suspected in the death of his now wife's dead husband. Is that correct? He's not suspected.
Absolutely. No, he's not suspected in any way.
And neither is she.
Nope, neither is she.
Okay. But one of the consequences of his death, in the aftermath of his death in the pool, these two got married, right?
Absolutely. That's correct.
Okay. And I also want to stress again, John Paul Miller is presumed innocent of any and all charges. Yes, he has just been indicted by the feds, 2 counts, cyberstalking and false statement, but he remains innocent until proven guilty. As of tonight, he is innocent. If you know or think you know anything about this case, please call Robeson County Sheriff's 910-671-3100, 910-671-3100. We remember an American hero, Sheriff Alan Weber, Gove County Sheriff's, Kansas, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a wife turned widow and 3 children. American hero Sheriff Alan Weber. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.